Last episode on the Truest Adventure.
Gotta be the truest. Must be the truest.
And I see dude like lift the gun. And I'm just like, damn, he's like, I don't know what to do. So he shot, boom. And I tried to weave it. I turned to the side, tried to weave it. And that's when it hit me like right above my left eye.
I'm Trey.
I'm Quest.
And we're your hosts. Each week, we'll seek out and interview the heroes that live amongst us.
And each week, we'll ask them to tell us the story of an adventure that challenged them, stuck with them, and forced them to grow.
This is our truest adventure.
Yeah. So, but at this point, like, even when you're having, like, you're going through that thought process, had you come to terms with, like, yo, I can't see, and like my sight might be gone forever. Are you still thinking it's like a temporary thing?
I still think it's temporary because the doctor, I haven't really got that full checkup yet. You know what I mean? They're right, like, right. Oh yeah, right now you can't see. There's still a lot of swelling. There's still bullet fragments in your eyes. I got to get a full, you know, I got to get it cleaned out. You know what I mean? So me just being super healthy my whole life, I think I'm an ox. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, this is fine. I'll just eat a couple of carrots. You know, yeah. Good for your eyes. You know what I mean? This is what I'm thinking. Like, you know? So I went to the doctor a few weeks after that. And that's when the doctor was like, you're not going to be able to see ever again. And that's when it was like my stomach dropped. I think I cried for like 2 days straight, maybe. Like, I was just bawling. Like, it was crazy. Like, you know what I mean? So... it was cool, but the day I got out the hospital, you know what I mean? I got the hospital. I went back to Harlem. Everybody was like so many, like 200 people out there waiting for me, you know what I mean? Next day, I went to a party. I just kept partying ever since. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? I went out with a cane, gauze in my eye, my leg, bullet in my head, bullet in my leg, and I'm like in a party. Like, you know what I mean? Right. I'm just like, this is what I got to do to keep my spirits up, you know what I mean?
Anthony, maybe you could speak to this because, right, it's something that I'm aware of and I've talked to people about before. So, and this, you and I have never had this conversation, but I actually, I work in-house for a company here in New Orleans now, but I just started that job after the first of the year. Before that, I'd been a federal prosecutor for like 7 years. And so and you got to see some exposure of it when you were down here, like the nonprofit stuff I do mostly, with kids in New Orleans. And so I interact with kids who are in this position. I've seen, you know, defendants and people who cooperate with the government in this position, especially in New Orleans. But like this idea that when you live in the streets, that it's just like a matter of time and the odds are like you might get shot. Right.
Yeah.
So like when it happens, because I think a lot of like there's a fair number of people who might hear this interview and be like, what, he got shot and then he's out in the street partying or whatever. But like the mentality then is like, this was like, it's almost like getting shot or having something serious like this happen is a foregone conclusion. And so when it happens and you don't die, it's almost like the only reaction you can have is to celebrate and get out there.
Absolutely. I mean, like, cause me getting shot in my head, I'm like, once I got shot in my head, I'm like, I'm dead. You know what I mean? Right. I'm 20 years old. It's September. My birthday's in December. It's like 3 months before my 21st birthday. I'm like, what the, like, you know, I haven't even like been able to buy a bottle legally. Haven't even like gone to a club, let alone a strip club. I'm like, this sucks. Like, you know what I mean? I haven't gone to Vegas to do the annual guys trip. So yeah. I'm just like, this sucks. So when I came out being blind, my boys, like my support system is strong. Like every doctor's appointment I had to go to, well, it was like 5 o'clock in the morning. I had to leave Harlem at 5 o'clock in the morning. My three boys, they came with me to every single doctor's appointment, every single one. You know what I mean? Asking the doctor, like, yo, can I give him my eye? Like, can I do this? Can we do this? You know, they can't do it. They couldn't do it. But just the fact that they came with me to every doctor's appointment, I knew like I'm going to be fine. Like, you know what I mean? Once my body get better, I'm going to be fine. So after a while, you just have to like, you have to decide. Like, either you're going to live or you're going to die. And die doesn't mean, like, literally being dead. It's just, like, just staying home, being depressed, and just feeling bad for yourself. And that's just really wasn't the option. And when people just go so hard for you, you kind of just live for them, in a sense. You know what I mean? It makes them feel like, oh, this wasn't for nothing. I didn't want to let them down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you say that, and then I wonder, like, okay, well, that makes perfect sense. Like, but you got to get your body recovered, right? You got shot in both legs, so the bullet went in one and out the other. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and you're talking about being a man child and dunking a basketball. Like, you get shot in your legs, obviously, and if you lose a bunch of blood, if that's the case, like, how long does it take for you to get your body back? Like, I mean, you got to basically learn to walk because you can't, like, walking's an all new experience, right? Because you're blind.
When I got shot, they were like, well, you know, you're going to have to rehab first. We can't really let you out of here till you could walk. I got up out that bed. Like, we're walking. I walked around that whole hospital the next day. I walked around that whole hospital floor. Like, I'm good. I could walk. I'm good. Wow. And they're just like, all right, well, if we let you go, you got to go to jail because you have a warrant. So it's either you're going to have to go straight to the bookends, or you could stay here and wait till Thursday until the judge comes to your room and, like, you know, he sees you here.
So you're like, I'm good. And then they're like, well, if you're good, we're taking you to bookends, which I'm assuming means Rikers Island. Right. And you're like,
nah, probably not Rikers, probably just the bookends. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, probably just like Central Bookends in the Bronx, like 161st, like right there by Yankee Stadium. But I would have to go through the system, you know what I mean?
Right.
But
I talk, did you hit that Kaiser Sose when they were like, you can stay here in the hospital?
Yeah, I was like,
you
what? Go to I got jail. Comfortable. I was like, you know what?
My legs hurt a little more than I thought.
Word up. I lay right
it was a miracle for that 15 minutes, but since you mentioned jail, I think I'm going to lay down right here.
Yeah,
can I have some more jello?
Yeah, I posted up, and then the cop, and then the judge came to my room that Thursday. He's looking at me like, what happened? I'm like, I got shot. He's like, damn. He's like, you're handcuffed to the bed? And I'm like, yeah. So he looks at the cop and is like, why do you have him handcuffed? He's like, I'm just following procedure. He's like, well, where is he going? Like, he can't even find his way out the room, let alone the hospital. Like, wait, why do you find necessary to handcuff him? And the cop was like, he's like, get these handcuffs off of him. He's like, you know what? I'm just going to, you know, get rid of your warrant, whatever. You don't have to pay any fees. This is your second chance. You know, just go out and make the most of it.
Wow. And you know what? Like, even as you were telling that, I got lost in the story, and I just momentarily forgot. You're blind, and that's obvious to the people who come because you got gauze on your eyes, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the judge walks in and he sees you all like all laid up in the bed, handcuffed to the bed with gauze on your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So then your legs are good. And you're walking around. The judge gives you this second chance. Mm-hmm. And here's the question. Is it like, so now you have been working inside of the criminal justice system since May.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you see second chances given now? Because obviously we're 8 years, is it 8 or 9 years down the road from when this happened to you?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it depends, right? Case by case. Sometimes you look at it. So me being a young this social worker, I also work closely with an alternative to incarceration program called Common Justice. And they often ask us for referrals. So I'm the point man in the office to try to get them as many referrals as possible. So they work with defendants of crimes. If they plead guilty to the felony and the felony is up to 15 years in prison, they can work with them. So now their job is to get clients and to, you know, not send people to jail and rehabilitate them that way, which I could get behind. But me going through my situation, I see a crime when it's like, oh, this person shot at this person, but let's try to offer him the program so he won't have to go to jail. So my job will then have to be, all right, well, if he's going to take a plea, let's offer him this program and keep him on the street. And the victim may feel like, what do you mean keep him on the street? Like, what do you mean? Just because he's pleading guilty to the felony, he gets a second chance. Like, he tried to kill me. And although I agree with the victim, then like my job was also to try not to help this young black man go to jail because we don't want to see more of our people in jail. So it's always that I'm always conflicted between the two. Like, how can I make this decision without putting my own personal bias in there? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's tough because you read about mass incarceration and like what it does to like our communities, like how much it costs, like what, $205,000 to $240,000 to keep one person on Rikers Island for 1 year. Like, how many of us don't even get a chance to make that amount of money, but the government pays that much to keep one individual in jail, and like we pay for that as taxpayers,
right?
Ugh. So you always, I'm always stuck between the two, and I, of course I'm gonna do my job, but I don't want to see anyone else go to jail. But I understand this person, like he tried to kill me. He needs to, he has to serve, like justice has to be served. Right. I don't know. It's rough.
Yeah, razor's edge you walk.
Right.
Yeah. It's rough, right. But. Get it done. I mean, you know, it'll work out the way it's supposed to. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like one of those things where, and I described this to, so I've had a handful of opportunities to go speak to young kids, usually predominantly young black kids, with career days, or to share like a bit about my background and like what I've done in my career. And undoubtedly, every time I've done it, I always get the same question of like, well, why would you go be a prosecutor? Why wouldn't you use your skills to like go be a defense attorney and get people out? And what I try to explain to them is, to me, the justice system, prosecution and defense, it's two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. You have to have people working for the benefit of trying to do justice, right? And keep those who are protect those who've been victimized and those who would continue to do so with like no regard for humanity and all that stuff off the streets. But on the same token, when you come across those people who, honestly, there are instances where people make mistakes, and there can be a situation where somebody shoots somebody, even with intent to kill them, where it could be a mistake and people could write their lives. Like there are tons of folks who would hear like that first part of your story about you selling drugs, running the streets or whatever, and just, you know, write you off as a foregone conclusion. You should end up in jail for the rest of your life, put you under the jail. Right. Mm-hmm. But unless you give people those opportunities, sometimes life writes the course, which it sounds like worked out in your situation. And other times, you know, you come across the right person or you get the benefit of going into the right program and people become productive members of society. Mm-hmm. But it's all, you have to have both sides of it. You have to have people hashing it out and fighting it out and judges who are neutral, like just trying to do the right thing and do justice for it all to work out well.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that as well. And it's like, you know, and what this program work with is ultimately up to the victim. If the victim doesn't give us consent, then we can't even offer the defendant the plea. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Okay. So
the victim has to give consent, and then they can work with the defendant. So, and that's the great part of it, because it takes a decision out of my hands. And then you see this, the power of just like humanity and like how people just like, you know what? Yeah, like you said, it probably just wasn't mistaken. Maybe if they get a better chance and they have some good support around them, they'll turn their life around. And then I get to go to those graduate, like they literally graduate in the courtroom. The judge is like, well, you completed your program. Your felony is now reduced to a violation. And boom. You know what I mean? And then sometimes I go to like lectures and I see these same people that graduated this program now in these communities, like speaking up at these lectures, like, you know what, this program is great, and advocating for these programs and advocating for like people like them and going on to do the same work that I do. So it is kind of cool.
That's awesome.
That's so great.
And okay, so what we really want to, I mean, want to talk to you about everything, and we could talk. I mean, it's like, I feel like we could sit here, and I mean, I'm fortunate enough that you were just here a couple of weeks ago and we got a bunch of time to talk then. And hopefully we get to see you soon, either in New York or DC or some other place running. But like the reality of the situation is you're a runner.
Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm a runner. I'm not the best at it, but you know,
okay. Well, look, I beg to differ. What, you were just down here for Rock and Roll Half. What'd you run that half in?
2:15.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't anybody... my best, wasn't my worst. I didn't sleep the night before.
Right. So, right.
Sorry about that.
But with that said, like, trust me, you're a legit runner. If you can run a half marathon in 2:15 off of no sleep and then be able to say, wasn't my best, wasn't my worst. And that's notwithstanding you not having your sight. That's if you, I know people who have sight who are struggling to break that as their best time.
Yeah, that's, I appreciate that.
So then you get into running and, I mean, can you tell us, like, what, I mean, so the question that we're asking people in this season now is, what's your truest adventure in running? But that's the question to you. What is your truest adventure in running?
You know what? This, every single run I do is honestly an adventure, because I never know the course. Sometimes I'm running with different people. There's always different people out there. There's always different things that happen. different dialogue that happened, but I would have to say the best one so far was I'm going to Cuba and doing a half out there. Just being able to experience Cuba and just like their race culture out there, like people running with their dogs and like low flying drones. And I mean, at the water station, they literally gave out like pouches of water you had to bite into and just kind of chug it down, and like no Gatorade, just like pouches of grape juice. Like,
here's your Ziploc baggie of water.
For real.
Enjoy Cuba.
Exactly. Just bite into it. I mean, there's traffic going. There's a few cops like stop. There's a few cars, there's traffic going on like the highway.
Don't mind crazy. The runners. If you could please just drive around our runners for this race. We're not going to pay to shut the road down.
Right.
Wow. So when were you in Cuba?
Like in November. So yeah, like November. So it was 2 weeks after the New York Marathon. We went out there, probably like 8 of us. So
okay. And then how do you end up going to Cuba to run? Like that's what? I know people can go to Cuba, but I didn't know you could go to Cuba to just run.
So that's one of the, you have to have a reason to go to. So that's one of the 5 visas you could get. One of them is through athletics. So one of them is like education, athletics. I don't know the other few. I can't really speak to those. So last year, Achilles has started a chapter in Cuba. So they announced it right after the New York Marathon. And I was like, I'm going next year. And everybody was like, oh, okay, whatever. Blah, blah. So I was really serious about it, pushing it. And people signed up, and then we go out there. So while we go out there, the founder of Achilles was also out there because Cuba, even though Cuba said they could start an Achilles chapter, they revoked their, like, I guess they want to say their right to do that. They were like, well, it's not like a Cuban company, so you can't rep Achilles Cuba. Y'all can't wear those Achilles Cuba shirts no more. So they went out there to go to, like, the embassy to go advocate for an Achilles chapter out there. But we just went out there to run the race.
So then when you got there to run the race, did they let you wear the shirt?
Oh, yeah. We wore our shirt. I wore my Achilles shirt, New York shirt. But they couldn't wear an Achilles Cuba shirt specifically.
Oh, wow.
So I went out there. I saw Nacho. I didn't go out there with Nacho. I saw Nacho. And Nacho was hilarious. He goes out there and he writes his address on little pieces of paper, and he's handing them out while he's running, like, hey, party here afterwards. he made business cards for the run. Like, you know what I mean?
I feel like Nacho is the greatest ambassador and diplomat for anything that Nacho is doing.
Yo, he's nuts, man. He just wakes up and he's ready to go. Like, oh, you want to do an Ironman? Just do it. Just do it tomorrow.
So then here's the question. So you said that you saw Nacho when you were there. Did you already know Nacho through Achilles in New York?
Yeah. I know Nacho for like a year or two already.
Okay.
I've known Nacho. Yeah. So we ran our first half together probably last year. Him and I went to Atlantic City. I don't know why we picked these party cities to go to and think we could go run a race and be like great, but I did 206.
I'm super happy you did. Yeah. Honestly. He's like, and here's the thing is like when you say like, some of these like young men that you meet, like see you and you're wearing your sunglasses and they're like, oh man, this guy's just like an asshole or whatever. Like he's too cool for school. Like I have to share this story because it's just like so funny. In my mind, it's funny. Uh-huh. I keep assuming what people will think is funny, which is kind of a dickish move. But so you come down to New Orleans and you know, you're going to kick it with Nacho and you're staying at a guy's house named Trey. Uh-huh. And guy's going to pick you up from the airport. His name's Harold. Uh-huh. And so you think you're coming to New Orleans. You think Harold is the white guy. And you think Trey is the black guy. And so you meet Harold because I'm out of town at a fundraiser. Harold comes and picks you up at the airport. And you're like, oh, yeah, this is a brother. Cool. I meet you the very next day. And you're like, definitely white. Like, first thing you think when you meet me. And so here's the question I have for you. What was it that you were like, definitely white? Like, because you said it was like instantly. Like, the second I said, hello? Or like.
So it was funny because they were all doing the comic construction thing. So Tasha and I stayed in the car. So she was like, it's a pickup truck that pulled up behind us. So I'm like, okay, pick up Doug. All right, cool. So I'm thinking like, oh, that gotta be Trey because they said Trey's about to meet us here around this time. So she was like, I don't know, that might not be Trey. You know what I mean? This guy's driving a pickup truck. You know what I mean? He's a white dude. So I'm like, So I'm like, all right, cool. So when you come back, and they're like, yo, Trey's right there, blah, blah, blah. Somebody said, like, yo, Trey's right there. Y'all can go back with Trey. I think Harold came back and said that. So I'm like, all right, cool, cool, cool. So I go to your car, and you were like, hey, what's up? I was like, oh, this dude's white. Like, yeah, this dude's said, you're right. But so I also thought Harold was white. So they wouldn't let me live it up the whole weekend because we're at the beer tasting. And they're like, Harold's black and Korean. I'm like, he's black and Korean? Get the fuck out of here. So somebody else that was there was like, oh, yeah, and I'm white. And I thought he was black. And I'm like, oh, man. So, like, a year or two ago, I just found out, like, the NBA player Kevin Love, I just found out he was black. Because he was white. Because I thought Kevin Love was black. I'm like, oh man! The whole trip, I'm like, he hoops.
LeBron really wants him on his team. You're like, definitely black guy.
Definitely black. Brother.
Definitely black. Last name Love. The white guy named Love.
Come on, it's Kevin. Like, come on,
K-Love. Any balls? Come on,
he's balling.
And I love this, how you just, like, not by your option have to live this colorblind life. Like, you literally don't see color, because then I meet you and I just go by Quest and I'm like, Quest, 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 everybody. And at some point after we'd been hanging out, we'd come back from the run. We're at the bar drinking. You'd had a few drinks. All of a sudden out of nowhere, I'm talking to somebody. He's like, oh shit, Quest is black too? Damn. Your black and white radar was like all off in the world. Yo,
they be throwing me off, bro. These young professionals, you just don't know anymore. So I mean, even being in Harlem, I was in this one bar one day and I was like the only black dude in there. Like, I was the raisin in the rice bowl, which is fine, but it's like, you just don't expect that in Harlem. You know what I mean? So I just learned to keep it quiet sometimes and just ask people around me. But I don't know. The whole weekend, I'm screaming at Nacho, you're not doing the good job, Nacho. You're not telling me anything.
It's just funny to me because, like, your reaction to it is like, I've met a lot of girls here in New Orleans, and like, a few of them I've gone to meet their family wherever they live.
Uh-huh.
Straight up, same reaction. Like, get off the plane, and their parents are like, he's white? Because they've been telling their mom, like, I'm dating this guy in New Orleans. His name is Trey. And I'm not going to name any names here, but I have I have seen parents.
I feel like we got to do you like Markel. No, name names.
And just like straight up, like this sense of relief when I get off the plane, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And what's crazy is like, I was like living all over the country throughout like my early 20s. And so a lot of my resume has all of these like New Orleans jobs on them. Mm-hmm. And what's so crazy is I would turn in a resume at a place and it would say Trey Monahan, phone number, everything, everything exactly the same. If I didn't get a call back, I would turn in the exact same resume, but it would say James Monahan on it and get a call back because that's my legal name is James. It's just like, you gotta be kidding me. This is insane. So I love that you were like, within 2 seconds of meeting, we're like, oh, Trey's definitely white.
It's a white guy.
Definitely white. Love that story.
Crazy.
So I guess I've got one last question because we want to try to wrap it up. I really am appreciative of how much time you've given us this evening. And again, hopefully we can get you and Nacho on to kind of talk about that combined like interaction through Achilles. Mm-hmm. But my question to you is, are you going to come to DC and run...
So I looked for the cherry. It's actually sold out. So I couldn't register for it. So I'm thinking if I'm just going to like go out there and just hang out.
Cheer Zone's kind
of
fun.
Yeah, you know there's going to be a bunch of us up there. Whether running or not, there will be a good time had by all.
Yeah, I think I'm going to come. There's a dual athlon that weekend that people are trying to get me to sign up for. But I may just skip it because the next week I'm going to. Going to do my next marathon is the next week and the following weekend after the cherry blossom. So maybe I'll just go out there and hang out.
Wow.
It's just incredible. I'm sitting here like, I'm going to try to do this 10 miler in DC.
Right.
I have all of my vision. Right. Everything's pretty good on me. And you're like, dual athlon, marathon the next weekend. I mean, you truly, man, like just everything aside, like just you as an athlete, you are incredibly inspiring.
Dude.
2:15 on your half marathon when you were here on I know what it is to run in New Orleans, and it is like, it is incredibly difficult when people are like, so why don't we just do one shot?
Just one.
Because we've got a race tomorrow, and then it's 4 hours later, seven shots later, and you're like, if I get 2 hours of sleep, I should probably be able to get close to my time.
Right. Well, and like, I just want to echo what Trey was saying about like, you were just like so motivational as like an athlete and a person. I had to do, so, you know, we're training for this ultra marathon. Mm-hmm. And so I had to do a 16 mile trail run yesterday. And I waited so late in the day to do it that I like got the first 14 done. And like the sun has like set at this point. And I had my completely forgot to bring my headlamp out there. So I'm on this trail in this park. And there's like, there are like, it's lit on the paved part of the park that goes in a loop. But the trail part, which is the outer edge of it, is not lit. And I only had 2 miles to go, and it's like completely dark, and there are parts of it where I just really can't see very well at all. Mm-hmm. And so I'm having to take like really short steps. There's tree stumps, da da da. And like, I had a momentary thought about how I should go onto the lit path, or I should just do 14 or 15 instead of 16. And literally you popped into my head, and like our credo for the 504th, no fucking slack. It's like, get the fucking 2 miles done, mm-hmm. get the 2 miles done. So I appreciate you for that. All right, we're gonna wrap it up because, like I said, we want to keep it locked in. This has been great, man. I appreciate you so much for it, and we're gonna figure out a way to get you and Nacho on together because we definitely want to have that full conversation about Achilles and y'all's bond through running, mm-hmm. In one of our episodes.
Absolutely. Just let me know when, and then I either go to his crib, you come to my crib, and we'll sort it out.
Okay, perfect.
Excellent, all right, thanks a lot, dudes, for reaching out. It's really cool. Appreciate thank doing
you.
This.
Thank you so much for your time. My name is Trey.
And I'm Quest. Thank you for listening to The Truest Adventure.